We're ready for Perek Daled. And I have entitled the shiur, A New Beginning, because the first chapter of human existence closed at the end of Perek Gimel. And we are now ready for this new life of Adam and Chava, post-Chet and post-Gan Eden. So what I would like to do today is to do the first two psukim of Perek Daled, and see the new beginning in a very significant sense that the Torah outlines for us here. As you know, and we'll see now momentarily, there is, you don't want to overstay it because I don't want you to be jaded or feel that I sound trite, but you almost can't help but so many times in these prukim talk about the first time X has ever happened, and how significant and how incredible that is. So we saw that a lot at the end of the perek, in the previous issues, but we now have the first ever children being born, which is an incredible thing to consider. So in Perek Daled we are told, Pasuk Aleph, Ha'adam yada es chava ishto, which of course literally means that Adam knew his wife. In case we're not sure what's being implied, the continuation of the Pasuk perhaps makes that clear. Vatahar vatelet eskayin. And she conceived. So presumably that reflects back on what vayada means. And then, telet eskayin, she gave birth to Kayin. Now, we already know his name. Apparently his name was Kayin. However, the Torah tells us, why was he called Kayin? And it's interesting, in case anyone who has a machlekes with their spouse, who should decide the name of a child? In this case, it was Chava. Vatomer kanisi ish es Hashem. Now, how do you translate that? Kanisi ish, that's the easier part of the pasuk, of the phrase. Kanisi ish, I've acquired a man. Es Hashem. What's one plausible translation, which clearly is theologically impossible? Or very who is God? Right, so how do you translate that here? Right, so I think we'll have to go for now before we discuss it further with the im, right, as Ethan said, with the with. Kanisi ish, I acquired a man.
S. Has the word mean in parentheses.
Me?
Mean. No, Kanisi Gavra mean.
Oh, from.
But it had in parentheses. In other words, it must be.
Yeah, because how do you understand that? What does that mean?
Well, that's S. That's going on S, I think.
Right.
Right, so what does that mean? And even if we do with the im, Ethan, if we go with Ethan's im, which is not theologically problematic, I acquired for myself a man with Hashem. What does that mean? How about translate that into a thought? It makes sense. I acquired, if anything, you would have thought with my husband. What does that mean with Hashem? Keep that in mind. Okay, let's see the next pasuk. Hard to understand where that name comes from. Perhaps that is one of the many reasons why Kain is not a popular name. I haven't had the choice of naming a Kain just yet.
Well, Rashi is very popular.
I think there's probably a lot more than one reason.
But Rashi addresses.
Okay, is Rashi a crutch?
Huh?
Rashi's not a crutch. Rashi's not our scroll. He doesn't translate. First, we have to try to understand the text, and then we'll look at all the mafarshim that we can. But yes, I know that Rashi does. Thank you, Harry. Okay, Pasuk Beis. Right, this is the first most important thing, right? You can insert joke here. You know, Chava has a child. She's in pain. That's it. No more children. And then Baruch Hashem makes her forget. And then, sure enough, Atosaf Aledes. She had another child. Es Achiv, his brother, Es Hevel. Now, that's also a peculiar name. What does Hevel usually mean in Tanakh? Or, by neither of which are hugely flattering terms. And the Torah continues. It does not, well, let me.
It also says very matter of factly that his name was Hevel. It doesn't say that he was named.
And what else doesn't it say, Ellie? What else doesn't it say? Okay, what does it say about the name?
The
reason.
There you go.
Yeah, it doesn't say, I just was trying to flesh it out. I know that's what you're getting at. What, it doesn't say the name, right? It doesn't say why, right? So that's something we have to think about. Vihi Hevel Ro'etzel, right? The Jewish mother stereotype, the first thing we need to know is, what's the nachas, what's the profession? Ro'etzel, he is a shepherd. Kayan haya oved adamah, and Kayan worked the fields. Now the truth is, you know, if I had to guess, those were pretty much the only two options. Now, what were the other options in those days, right?
Coal.
Huh?
Coal.
It's before Saint David.
Right. I was going to say it's before fathers-in-law. But I wasn't going to say anything, Ellie. Yeah, it was not what I was going to say. What else is there? There's ground. Okay, that's an obvious profession. And there are animals. Like, I don't know what the other, you know, thing. There's no business. There's no industry. There's no... So, to me, there's probably were two industries then, you know. It's like certain, you know, colleges. You know, it's like, you know, everyone's going to be either, you know, one major or the other. You know, so everyone knew, you know, when you were born, you know, lawyer, accountant, you know, you're going to be... shepherd, farmer, okay. They had a boat. They had the whole nachas, you know. I met a family recently. One son was an accountant, one son was a lawyer, one son was a doctor. I said, your mom should have everything.
In that regard, Rabbi, it doesn't even say what other people did.
No, it does not say that. Well, he didn't need to. He had sons who worked.
Yeah, but I mean, before.
He had sons who worked. He didn't need to work.
One is living the curse.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. We'll have to see that point is made. Right? There's one, if I had the preference... You know, which was the more bakavadika, for lack of a better term, field, no double entendre intended, profession. So as Ethan points out, right, what was just cursed? The land was, you know, cursed. You know, which one's a harder job, right? Because, right, to be a farmer, much harder, I think, right? Certainly it looks like much more physically exertive. So let's ask...
What do you do with the sheep? You can't eat them.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Meat is not permitted yet.
Very good.
That's actually something that I will not be prepared, at least on my own, I don't think, to answer today. That's a good point. I was going to acknowledge, I was going to point out, although I guess I didn't follow through its logical conclusion, that it was true that not until after the flood could they eat meat. So that is a good point. Let's think about, we've already addressed some of them. What are the other questions that we might want to address? What are the other issues? Anything else stick out at you? What else can we anticipate the Mefarshim discussing? What else do you think needs resolution?
Well, the order of the profession is not the first order, but maybe that's the
Pesach. Okay, fair enough.
Right.
Let's go back even to Pesach Aleph. Let's just try to go in a little bit in sequence if we can. What piques your interest about Pesach Aleph? Good, that's number, right, very good. Right, very good, right. We are so used to it, that's correct, but this
I
is the...
I like the reference to Chava Yishto, you know, in the sense that still, you know, the Mefarshim we had earlier about, with everything that happened, and, you know, you could have blamed it on the wife and whatever, but she's still his wife, she's still, you know...
So, I'm going to just address, or just rephrase Bernie's point, and then I will reference Ethan's in a second. So, first thing is, probably all of us are familiar with this, but again, this is the first time it's used. This is the first time that term is used for physical intimacy, and the question is why? And if you'll tell me it's a tsanua word, okay, but there's 100 other tsanua words that could have been picked. What is being implied by the choice of this word? That's number one. Number two, Ethan's pshat is beautiful, but it actually begs a question, which is not as obvious, but is going to be the first question we'll get to, which is the timing of all of this. When did this happen?
Right after his punishment.
Okay.
It could have been, but it's not really clear since it's in the past tense. It could have even happened.
Very good. It's not. The obvious point would be to say what Harry said, because that's the sequence of the psukim. But I point out that that's not so obvious if you're medayik a little bit more in the text. And we will see right off the bat, it's a major and very famous and fundamental machlokas mefarshim. When did this all happen? That's two issues right away. Number three, perhaps, which is what is going on with the name Kayin, and specifically what is the end of it, Es Hashem, how do you understand that? Not as important, I would say, but it's still an important question. Okay, let's skip to the next pasuk. He hevel roetzon. So we already pointed out that there we're not told why Hevel's name is Hevel. What is the significance of Hevel? And whatever it is, why aren't we told? So I'll call that two versions of the same question to a certain extent. That would be about our fourth or fifth question. Anything else in pasuk beis?
One.
It's a trick question. I'm not sure there is anything else. I'm just wondering if you have thoughts, just because I haven't prepared anything else doesn't mean you don't have thoughts. You know, the relationship between the two brothers, which we know is going to end not so well, but what is implied at this point, if anything? And also, not that it's a question, but Ethan already, I wouldn't say stole the thunder, but in a good way anticipated, is the choice of professions and why one might wanted to have avoided one of the professions. Even though, as Ethan himself, this is Ethan's big night, we'll quote Ethan about quoting Ethan, even as he also pointed out, that there is, it's hard to understand what the purpose of being a shepherd is. So there's nothing to do with the meat yet.
Nobody has to bring up the Mizrahi here. It's good for shearing, milking.
Okay, those are not bad answers. Those aren't bad answers, but those are the kind of answers which you only get if you first ask the question. Right?
All sorts of things.
Right, right. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's the they're technical answers, but... Okay, right? That's a technical answer. Those are good answers. I didn't say that Mizrahi, that's good. But the point is that it's not the obvious choice to make. In the world in which they lived in, even though I said somewhat seriously there's two professions, there really was really only one likely profession. That Hashem has just told you, how are you going to survive? You're going to have to work the land. Okay, so now that we know we have to work the land, we'll be farmers. Right? So the question would be why one didn't choose that, what was the advantage, and Ethan already pointed out the issue of the curse, which is, you know, on the one hand, we would have expected, therefore, that they work the land because they now know they need to. On the other hand, you know, we would understand why that may not be the easiest or best thing one would want to do. Okay, let's go back now. From the beginning of time. Right, from the beginning of time. Although we will see from a medrash, which we'll end with, that at least in the beginning, it started off very well, actually. It started off very well. We'll see from the medrash. It is worth noting, just to point out, and we'll obviously have more time to speak about this, and I'm thinking of at least one or two specific examples. You know, there's almost nothing more, kind of what Bernie's alluding to in a specific campus, there's almost nothing worse than a machlokas about money. Right? That's usually what gets everyone's fire. Right? The only thing worse than that when the machlokas is in the family. If it's about money in the family, religion is not as important as money to most people. That's a fact. Rashi already tells us that about some of our shvatim, right? It depends which ones. I'm not saying everybody. Of course not. Of course not. For good or for bad, not everyone. But the bottom line is what gets people to fight, usually, especially I'm not talking about now about going on religious wars, obviously, but you know, there's nothing more explosive than fights about money. And when they're in the family, it's like, and I know at least two, three off the top of my head, I think of families that are permanently, I hope not permanently, but currently severed over that. So the fact is that they start off, you know, maybe it was a good thing, different professions, no competition, maybe they'll work together, who knows. But Bernie's already, you know, since we all know to a certain extent how the story is going to develop, it's worth even thinking about now what seeds of conflict may have already been between the two brothers. Okay, let's go back to the beginning and let's see Rashi. Let's start off our new parak with Rashi. And here we want to know, first issue, which I think Rashi is going to address, is the question which we just mentioned. When is all of this happening? Right. We ended off and getting kicked out and punished from Gan Eden, and now we hear that Kanai Nahara, Mazel Tov, they've had two sons. Says Rashi, Ha'adam Yada, as was indicated, Kvar, already, in other words, Yada, it's a past Lashon. It's Lashon Avar. Yada, he knew. So what does Rashi infer from that, surprisingly, Harry? Kodem ha'inyon shel mala. The Torah is out of order. This happened before what we discussed above, namely, Kodem shechata, v'nit rad migan eden. This all happened before Adam sinned, and before he was driven out of Gan Eden. V'chein, not just the conception, not just the Vatahar, not just a conception, which we know. We saw all sorts of drushim that spoke about Adam and Chava being intimate together and how that enticed the snake, etc., etc. So you might have thought it was just a conception that happened before the chait. No, Rashi continues, v'chein ha-hereyon. Also the pregnancy, meaning it wasn't just like, you know, inside Chava, the sperm and egg had met. More than that, right? She was, if you will, showing. The pregnancy was developing. And more than even that, v'haleida, she actually gave birth to our two fine young men before the chait. And now he just makes his point more strong from a textual perspective. She'im kasav, because if it had been written, vayeda Adam, in the present, Adam knew, or excuse me, va, with the future, va, nishma, then we would have understood, shela achar shenitrat ha'ilobanim. That was after they were kicked out. Because it didn't say that, it says, yada, so that implies, he says, that it already happened. That is the sheet of Rashi. Now, what is the strength of Rashi and what is the weakness of Rashi?
Well, the obvious question is, why would the Torah have switched the...
Right, good. And what's the strength? You alluded to it before. The inference, right? The inference of the language of being in the past tense. Right? Take a look at the first source on your sheet. The Eben Ezra, he's not the only one, but he's one who disagrees. We're not surprised that the Eben Ezra disagrees, because we know his M.O., you're going to have to tell Eben Ezra that the Torah was written out of order, you're going to have to drag him kicking and screaming. That's not going to be an Eben Ezra-esque shot that you'd want to say. What does Eben Ezra, in fact, say? The Ha'adam ke'asher ra'a shlo yichya begufo va'atzmo. When Adam now saw he's no longer going to live, and I'll add, forever, because I assume that's what he means, as we discussed back when, that Hashem had said, if you eat from this tree, you'll lose your life, and we know that it didn't mean die right away, even if Adam and Chava may have thought that, which is unclear, but we now know they're still alive, so that's not the issue. However, says the Eben Ezra, he now knows that death is on the horizon, whether that's 930 years from now, which in those days might have been considered a blink of an eye, but there is now going to be an end. He won't live forever. And therefore, he is consumed with the same thing that has consumed people forever, immortality. And therefore, Eben Ezra says, "L'olam hutzrachu l'achayos hamin." And here, many of us are self-absorbed, and we are self-pretentious, and we think, "Well, I have to carry on my name." And you know, the rest of us can say, "You know, it's nice, but the world will be just fine without another Gottlieb. It'll be okay." But here it's not, it's for real, you know. Here someone can, you know, Ein Hadavar Teli Ela Bi, you know, as we say in Chazal, it's everything is dependent on me, or Kol Mekayim Nefesh Achas Miyisrael, if you keep one life, Kiilu Kiyim Olam Malay, it's the whole world. Right? That's a figure of speech. It's an important figure of speech, usually. Here it's literal. Here it's literal. Imagine for a moment, knowing that, you know, if we don't have children, the jig is up. At some point, there's nobody else. Right? In any other context, it's a personal issue. It can be personally difficult, but it's a personal issue. Here, the whole species, the whole world, Hashem's whole experiment, everything is dependent. And therefore, Adam says, we've got to have kids, we've got to perpetuate the species. Al-Kain Amra, and that's why the Torah says, Kanisi Ish Es Hashem. I think what the Eben Ezra is implying is that that's, again, which is our next issue, which is what is that, or one of the issues we want to get to, which is what's the phraseology there. I'm not sure how it works literally. I'm not sure, maybe you can help me, but I think what he's driving at is that Kanisi Es Hashem, meaning we said, why not, if it's Im, maybe okay, but what does that mean, I've acquired Hashem? The answer is, I have, in a sense, in here, they could really do something for Hashem. I've basically kept his experiment going. I can give a kinyon, a real sense of permanency, not so much ownership, but permanency to his experiment by now having Kayan, which did not exist before they had Kayan. And that's how he understands, I guess, I'm not sure exactly how he would translate those words, but I think that's what he's trying to get at. That's the advantage of having Kayan, that's what they were trying to accomplish, and that's where the name comes from, that through him, we've given a certain permanence to the world. Now, it's a very interesting shot in and of itself. But if you take a step back for a moment, and what does Eben Ezra say vis-a-vis Rashi? Yeah. He's disagreeing. And none of this makes sense. It's beautiful, but it's impossible according to Rashi. Rashi, the thought of having children apparently occurred before the chait. According to Ibn Ezra, it's in response to the chait. Now, I don't want to make too big of a deal for this, and I hope I'm not going into my rabbinic pulpit hat homiletically, but I think it's interesting that whatever external motivation Ibn Ezra subscribes obviously didn't exist for Rashi. That's why they have children. But, you know, so my guess, let me finish the thought, please. My guess is that that's a very, it's subtle, but a powerful statement to the natural instinct that most of us have. Just like all of us, we need to be blessed by Hashem with success in that area. But the point is, do we want to even try? And the answer is yes. Instinctively, they already wanted to try. They wanted to have. Not for any external reason, just because. Because that's how Hashem made them. That's how Hashem makes all of us, to want to have. Whereas, according to Ibn Ezra, and again, I don't want to jump to any conclusions, it's impossible to know, it's all speculation. Maybe according to even Ibn Ezra, even if there had never been a chayt, they would have children anyway. Maybe they would have. That you can't prove the negative here. But it's significant that Ibn Ezra is subscribing their motivation to not be the instinctive reason of having children. In the sense, again, unless you think that the instinctive reason is to perpetuate the species. But again, he doesn't mean it in terms of a self thing. If you want to talk about a narcissistic, you know, I want to perpetuate me, I want to perpetuate my name, I want to leave something. So that's not what Ibn Ezra is saying. And he's not even saying it in a more elevated, generous way. Just the instinctive, maternal or paternal, I want to have children, I want to love somebody, I want to give to somebody. He's not talking about, Ibn Ezra is not talking about any of that. He's talking about something completely external to Ibn Chava. Hashem's experiment. Hashem's project. I want to make sure that stays. I just think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating to different instincts for why to have the children. That's the, I guess, the more drushy angle. From a pshat perspective, whether my drush is right or wrong, we have a very interesting machlokas. First time in Chumash history. Right? Is the Torah written in order or not? According to Rashi, maybe yes, maybe no. He says in this case, no. It was out of order. According to Ibn Ezra, yes.
Rashi's quoting the Chazal.
Yeah.
So if the Ibn Ezra taking on
the, disagrees. Yes,
Chazal,
yeah. Ibn Ezra doesn't
disagree.
That Bishvil's that Yesh Ibn Ezra. The Ramban. I want you to know something. It was actually a fascinating thing. I got an email from YU yesterday. Was it a few months ago? They had a program on Motzei Shabbos in YU. I think they had about 2,000 something people there, where they showed this movie that was made. It was a private, YU did make the movie. A private filmmaker made a movie about the life of Rav Soloveitchik. The movie which I saw, the second screening ever, was at the OU convention in Eretz Yisrael, right when we saw it there. The movie itself is an hour and 45 minutes, and the most consistent criticism of it is all the things it left out. Because how are you going to summarize anyone's 90 years, let alone a great person's 90 years, in an hour and 45 minutes? But it's certainly a very long movie. They did it at the OU convention in Eretz Yisrael, was then after the hour and 45 minutes, which didn't start until like 10 o'clock at night anyway, so now you're almost at midnight, they had a panel discussion. So following that model, in the YU program, which was also on a Moshe Shabbos, and I assume it was all very late, and they filled Lampert Auditorium, as I said, I think they might have like 2,000 people or something, they then had a panel discussion between two of the Rav's closest Talmidim and the third one being the Rav's grandson. So, it's interesting that Rabbi Ganak, who was one of the close Talmidim, the head of the OU, so he was talking about something to do with Rav's personality, and he specifically mentioned, and in fact I was thinking of the essay before he quoted it, but then he explicitly quoted it himself, his own essay that he published, I think it was right after the Rav died, I have it at home, where he had a whole beautiful drasha about who the Rav was as a person, and his whole idea was that even though people usually associate Brisk and Soloveitchik with the Rambam, Maimonides, and there's obvious good reasons to do so, he thought in a very subtle way the real model of the Rav was the Ramban, Nachmanides with a Nun. Why? So without getting too much into the details, such a beautiful, powerful idea, his point was that even though there were so many things that were revolutionary and original, and if you will, and I hate this term, progressive about Rav Soloveitchik, his entire motivation for doing all of those things was to be conservative, was to preserve the tradition. He thought to preserve it in the new world, we needed to do X, Y, and Z. But it wasn't that he was a progressive at all. He was incredibly conservative. Why is it, what's that got to do with the Ramban? Because the Ramban was a machadesh she'en kamohu, everything creative, everything original. And yet, And I never thought, I'm not sure if anyone before Rabbi Genach made this point or not, but to me, it was new when I first read it, so I'll give Rabbi Genach the credit for the observation. Every one of the Ramban's published works is not to do anything new. He's using his creativity to preserve the tradition. What's example number one? The Ramban Al HaTorah. As the Ramban himself tells us, and in countless examples he demonstrates, the Ramban Al HaTorah is to defend Chazal from the Ibn Ezra. That was a long way of getting to your point. But I thought it was beautiful and worth sharing. The Ibn Ezra regularly attacks Chazal. But regularly diverges. And as a general rule, the Ramban's whole purpose, in a very creative and original, in a sense, progressive ways, is to defend the more traditional Chazal approach. Yeah. So he pointed out that there are other examples. The Ramban on Shas, excuse me, in the Melchamos, is to defend the tradition of the Rif against the Balamor. In the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Ramban is defending the Bahag from the Rambam and others. Example after example. It is, I thought, a brilliant insight. If you go on the website, you can watch it. It's 45 minutes. It's on one of these things called real time. You actually can watch it. I thought it was going to be audio. It's video. You can see it. Not exactly riveting action, seeing three rabbis sitting up at a dark auditorium. So the audio would have been just as effective, frankly, as the video for that. But be that as it may, you can see it. It's definitely Kedar. There's some very important nuggets there. Okay, back to Bereshis. So that is the first machlokas that's important, I think, to know. What about this Im Hashem? So this thought that we already saw in Ibn Ezra, and I'm already pointing out about the machlokas, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, different things. Let's take a look at the Ramban. Actually, if you want, we can even before that. Let's take a look at Rashi. I'm sorry, the third Rashi. Now we're on to Kayan's name. Third Rashi, Es Hashem, which is we didn't understand that. So, who was it? I think it was Ethan. Someone before said, Bernie said, Im. That's what Rashi says. Kamo Im Hashem. It means with Hashem. As if Chava was saying to her husband Adam, Kishabara Osi, when Hashem created me, the Es Ishi and my husband, Levado Baranu. He did it all himself. Hashem did it all himself. Aval Bezeh, now, Shutfim Anu Imo. How powerful and beautiful. We are partners with him. And again, that's the Kanisi as Hashem. Not like the Ibn Ezra had said, which is that we are acquiring or enabling Hashem's permanence in this world. Forget long-term permanence. Says Rashi, just talking about the actual birth of Kain, the actual birth of Chava, of Hevel. Until then, it was just Hashem himself. And now we get to partner with Hashem. And of course, what is Rashi paraphrasing or applying? The well-known Chazal, the famous Gemara from Maseches Nida, of Shlosha Shutfin Ba'adim, or in Maseches Kedushin, that there are three partners in a person. But we, I mean, sometimes we repeat that, Maimer Chazal, it's important, but we lose sight. Usually, it's just true about every reality we know it's true about. It's just more significant when Rashi quotes it because it's a transition, it's a pivot. It's a pivot in human history. There already were two humans, but this is the first two births. And this is the first two times we have parents. It's about Hashem just making somebody. Now, says Rashi, they got the partner. Take a look at your source sheet number two, the Ramban. So he, in the first line, quotes Rashi. And then the Ramban adds, Hanach only, second line, Sh'amra haben Hazeh Yeli Kinyan LaHashem. This will be a Kinyan for Hashem. What does that mean? Kikasher Namus Yebim Komeno LaAvod Es Borenu. Now, if I understood Ibn Ezra correctly, we have a slight irony after my whole little spiel from Rabbi Genach. And that is that here you have the Ramban essentially agreeing. Am I reading it all right? Agreeing with Ibn Ezra. Right, which is a good point also. I think I've mentioned to you in the past in the name of Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, that was Soloveitchik's son, but he pointed out, actually he was speaking about different Rishonim, but he pointed out the different Rishonim have methodologies, but it's important to know when the Rishonim will give you an answer or an explanation that's different than their typical MO. Why? Because that shows you that they really believe it when they say it. They're not falling in love or falling into a trap with this is how you solve every problem. For the fact that they can admit the times that there are other explanations shows you that when they gave their MO type or their expected explanation, it's not just routine, but they really believed it. He said that about Tosfos, for example, but that's a separate story. So here also, even if the Ramban typically disagrees with Ibn Ezra, nope, it's Sometimes he can be right too. You know, he can agree with Ebenezer if that's appropriate. So that's this. That's the name. Now I want to mention, because I think it's so beautiful, and I want to see it inside with you, is the Hamek Dover. Hamek Dover, as you know, is the Netziv of Elojin, his commentary on Chumash, which is typically, part of what's so beautiful about him typically, is, if you will, I'm being a little bit superficial, or it's a very psychologically attuned and focused Perush, especially when he's dealing with characters of Tanakh. Obviously, when you say for Vayikra, there's not as much of that. But take a look what he says here. This is very, very beautiful. And as was mentioned before, the term Yada is ubiquitous. We always hear it when it comes to intimacy. So if it's going to be that way, we should at least know why. And I don't know, there could be other explanations, but one I know of and familiar with is this beautiful, beautiful Hamek Dover. He says it goes to the heart and to the uniqueness of what it means to be a human as opposed to an animal, and to what real, holy, and kadosh sexuality is supposed to be. Says the Hamek Dover, Ra'i Ladas, it's important to know, Shebechol Makom Dechsiv Baloshon Yediya, whenever the Torah uses the phrase or any form of the word yada or yadia, knowing regarding physical intimacy, what is that implying? What's that coming to convey? Mashma'o shehikira, that he really understood her. V'yada ethmi shuhu mashamish. And he really knew, and it doesn't just mean like it wasn't a stranger, really in a profound and intimate way, knew or knows the person that he's being intimate physically with. Ubishvil shehi hi ha'isha lo acheres. It's uniquely personal. I'm with you now because you are my wife and not some other woman. It's unique and personal. We have that personal connection. V'hainu b'toras kiddushin. It's sanctified and it's exclusively and unique. V'zehu diyak haloshon. Beautiful inference as a nativ. That's the reason why the Torah says so specifically, Yod Eschava Ishto. The word Ishto is extra, and none of us picked up on that. Why do you need Ishto? Who else is she? We all know Chava. There's only two people. We couldn't get confused yet. Why Chava Ishto? Because it's understanding that what all that Ishto implies in terms of the emotional, personal relationship, it's in that vein, Yoda. They were physically intimate, but in the context of their emotional and personal relationship. Below, and not at all, completely different. Below, just because she happens to be a female. Right? Two animals don't have any personal connection. They may, if they're normal, stick with their species, but there's no particular relationship between the two animals. Rather, in this case, yada as zu hanakeva. Dafka, specifically this woman, because of their personal relationship and connection. They have a unique, exclusive relationship. So I think it's a good pshat in Yada, and I think more importantly, it's a tremendous, tremendous hashkafa. A tremendous hashkafa. Again, especially in contrast with what we saw in a very literal and I think also figurative sense, was the approach, the animalistic approach from the snake. Right, he saw it as just craven and raw, and he also wanted to, if you will, cross-species it. Right? Where we know from Adam and his naming of the animals, right, that each animal had its unique, with each species was certainly unique. So to do a cross-species, that would be completely flouting this. But says that Hamek Dover, it's even more than that. Because normal, okay, the snake was abnormal, but a normal animal is going to not do cross, it'll be within the species, but still, that's not exactly personal and intimate. Whereas humans, what their aim is for, again, we know it's not always that way, sometimes humans act like animals, but what the what's supposed to be is this very unique and very personal and holistic relationship, as opposed to just isolating the physical from the other aspects which should exist. Okay. Yeah, from the as a nativ?
Yeah.
Okay, good. That's very interesting. I saw, getting back to psychology, and we saw one of the things which, if I ever wanted to write it up as like a pattern, I didn't look back, I haven't looked back at my notes to do it. One of the things, as you know, I stressed multiple times in the previous prakim, but I found so fascinating when Chazal and Midrashim or Gemara spoke about the psychology of Adam, and especially sometimes of Chava. you know, I thought some of those midrashim when it spoke about Chava's fears after she ate from the Eitz Hadas, I thought they were really powerful and riveting and very real, very, very real. Not that every woman would be that way, but they spoke to a certain reality. So in a similar vein, I thought the next Bereshis Rabbah was also fascinating. We see now two Perushim, what Kayin is referring to, what's the Kinyan we're talking about. We saw Ibn Ezra / Ramban as one, Rashi has another. Look at the Medrash has a completely different approach. It's really very interesting. Tomar Kanisi Ish Es Hashem. It's in Aramaic. Chamas La Ha Itzita Benin. When a woman will have a child, Amra, she says, Ha Kinyan Ba'ali Biadi. Now I really have permanent ownership of my husband. I won't be afraid that he'll leave me. If it's just me, who knows, maybe he'll get tired of me. But once I give him a child, and I'd like to think, or I like to assume this doesn't mean son, it means child, now there's already something that will... Good, 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 very good. I didn't think about that. Thank you, Al. That's very good. Again, just to point out the obvious, which is that I don't think any of these Midrashim meant that every woman feels that way. But I think there's a certain truth to psychologically, as sometimes women do feel. Again, Baruch Hashem, in our community, where it's really true, meaning one of the major social ills in the last 30 years in America and other places, is the fact that the men run away after they have the child, if they even wait that long. But that's not what it's supposed to be, obviously. More than that, I would say, and I've said this in various contexts, both public and certainly private, when I've spoken to couples, especially when they're expecting their first child, I found in general, and especially, I would say, honestly, in my own life, that the relationship between husband and wife was very much strengthened through having a child. It could have been wonderful without it. It was wonderful, at least for me personally, even without it. But there's a certain dimension which made it stronger. Because the reason I tell this is sometimes people come to me and they're worried they don't have time for each other anymore, they're too tired, they're too busy. So that is true. That is real. But to try to be machazik them, that I think that if you put in the time and the work and the investment and the effort, it's worth it. And that, again, that's in a sense what's speaking. Again, to be honest, the Bereshis Rabbah, I think, is speaking exclusively from the wife's perspective. But I think it's true to a large extent, at least with a modern man, for men as well. There's a certain element of the relationship which it contributes.
Would you say that it's significant that the first time in human history where man or woman acknowledges the role of God in the creation or in the world is Dafka in this context?
Is that true? Is that a...
Well, you look back to the Pesukim, I mean, Adam...
I'm asking, I'm not arguing.
No, I'm just saying, I checked.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like Adam prior to this, or even Chava prior to this, acknowledged the role of Hashem in the world. And it's not...
Very interesting. Okay, I'm not sure, but it's a good idea. Let me put it this way. It is true, and I think I've probably said this publicly and privately also, it is true that you really see... You know, the godless habore, the sense of Hashem, in nature, you know, in general and specifically in your own life, through the creation of a child. It's the greatest miracle there is, I think. And if that's what you're pointing out, then I don't disagree with it being true. Yes, I understand what you're trying to say.
Hashem is kind of superfluous. She just said this is the way Kanisi Ish, but that's Hashem.
Right. Well, again, obviously the other, not this medrash, the other earlier mepharshim we saw, we're trying to figure out what the role of Es Hashem is. You're giving another pshat.
Did she articulate?
Yeah, I like it. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's the right pshat, but it's certainly a truism, and it may certainly be a good pshat. Let's just see something that which I think most of us never remember if we've seen it before, and many of you maybe don't know yet, and that's the next Rashi. How many children does Adam and Chava have? I'm not talking about what who gets born later. How about right now? How many children do they have? So far we heard two.
Right.
Well, maybe even more than that. Look at the next Rashi. Rashi points out there's a lot of S's in the Pasuk. Right? And especially in the Tupsukim, right? Es Chava Ishto, Es Kayin, Kanisa Yish, Es Hashem, Es Achiv, Es Hevel. A lot of S's here. Right? And it's not Es Mein Kind. Right? That's the old joke, right? On what ship did they sail to the old country? From the old country to the new country? On the Es Mein Kind. S is eat in Yiddish. Right? My children should eat. That's the typical Yiddish bubby. Okay. So Es Achiv, Es Hevel, says Rashi. Es Kayin. Shlosha Esim. There are three appearances of the word S here. at Es Kayin, Es Achiv, Es Hevel. Ribuyimim, they're superfluous, they're extra, they're amplifications. Why? Malame, this comes to teach us, Shet Oma Nolda Im Kayin, a twin girl was born with Kayin. Im Hevel Noldu Shtayim. And Hevel had two twin sisters. Right, so there's actually five Kenai Nahara Kinderlach that they have their hands full. Kach Nemar, and that's why, according to this approach, it says, Vatosef. And she added, which she says is indicative that there was an extra sister born with Hevel than there was with Kayin.
Question about Israelites.
Why wouldn't they? I don't know. Anyone have an answer? I don't know. I mean, I have maybe an answer.
I mean, they would have named them, or Torah would have spelled it out.
Right. So, what's the? I guess the likely answer. I'm not sure it's the answer. But what's the likely answer?
Not involved later in the story.
Right. I don't take this out of context. There's no significance. In other words, lots of things happen. I mean, I don't know how much is happening at this point in history. Maybe there is even then. But certainly, as the Tanakh develops. Right, there's millions of things which are not recorded in Tanakh. Tanakh is not a history book. It's telling us what's important, what we needed to know. Part of what Tarshav Al Peh does, not all of it, but sometimes, especially if you ascribe to all or at least some midrashim actual factual historical import, which this may be one, because I'm not sure what other reason there would be to say such a thing. And sometimes we think it's a metaphor for a message. I'm not sure what the message would be here. Either there were sisters or there weren't. And presumably there has to be, as Ellie was alluding to before, else how did they get married? Right? There had to have been females. So this drush is a way of figuring out when they came into the picture. The fact that they were twins as opposed to born later, I'm not sure if there's any great significance to that one way or the other. Either it was or it wasn't. But it is interesting. If you ask me why it wasn't mentioned, that's my best guess.
Right.
That's my best guess. Okay, let's try to see a little bit more. The Ramban goes into the names. And he points out that we asked the question, again, I don't have a real good answer why the Torah didn't itself tell us, other than that we may have one based on the Ramban, right? Why didn't the Torah tell us what the reason for Hevel is? Position, not only might the Ramban be alluding to try to answer that question, the Ramban actually puts the two together. The message of the names, the larger message of the names according to the Ramban, is the combination of the two. What does he say here? V'kara ha'echad b'shem kinyon. Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. I thought this was a Kayin, right? Kayin, Kinyan. That confusion is intentional. V'kara ha'echad b'shem kinyon. The first one was named after the root word of kinyon, of creation or ownership. V'asheni hevel. And the second one, hevel. What does that mean? So what does hevel usually mean? Hevel usually means vanity or nothingness. Ki kinyon ha'adam, says Ramban, it's a joint message. Ki kinyan ha'adam lehevel dama. Because all possess, trying to teach a lesson from the beginning of time, they're all possessions of mankind lehevel dama. They're really impermanent, and in that sense, if you focus too much on them, in vain. And now you'll say, so why didn't the Torah tell us? So the Ramban answers, the Torah didn't want to say that, because it's not exactly a nice message. It may be a true message, it may be a bitter pill that has to be swallowed, but it's still bitter. It's still a bitter pill. Therefore, the Torah didn't want to say it. It's too depressing, it's too difficult. Kain lo nichtav tam b'shem hasheni. In case you're curious, he says, by the way, if that's good enough for you, hasod ha'mekubal b'inyan hevel godol mo'od. There's a super duper big Kabbalistic secret behind Hevel's name. He doesn't even tell you what it is. But I guess that's why it wouldn't be written in the Torah, so we wouldn't know it. But the first shot is obviously the more important one for us. That it was Badavka hidden because it was a little bit, we want you to get the message, but not in a way that's too difficult. And we know, right? You read Kohelet, and it's like, you know, it's hard to get up from shul and go home. What's the point of anything? I pointed out it. Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his essays, spoke to that, because even though this, according to Ramban, this is something that goes back to human history, but the real sensitivity to that and the crisis that enveloped is in certain sense a modern issue of modern philosophy, the nothingness and the worthlessness of man. And Rav Soloveitchik felt that was terrible. And how that purpose of that is exactly what the purpose of Torah and Yiddishkeit is. despite the wide chasm between man and God, and despite the fact that it's almost like we're running in quicksand, and so difficult, and personally for the global universe, it's just, you might think, what's the point of anything? You know, who am I? What am I doing? What significance do I have? Because that's really the role of what Torah is supposed to be, not only a bridge to Hashem, but a way of giving meaning where perhaps there wouldn't otherwise be. And that's not at all obviously a contradiction to the Ramban, because that's the Rav's point was not that that comes from, you know, having a car. In other words, it's the spiritual aspect of life, which is what, not to be necessarily an ascetic and not have the car or whatever else, but to know what's the meaning of life. Where does that come from? And at the end of the day, this is really just Ramban pointing out what, you know, the idiom, right? You can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. Those material possessions you don't get to take with you. Who you become, that is permanent.
It's more consistent that this episode occurred with the shot that this episode occurred after the Chayt. Because that's more consistent with, like, the Hevel. Before the Chayt, everything could have been not Hevel, could have been, like, more very...
I don't know. It was still a super-duper spiritual world, so our physical... In Gan Eden was physicality. I don't know, maybe it was even less important there. I don't know if that's, I'm not sure if that's, I hear what you're saying, but I, you know.
Right,
that's true. Okay, I hear what you, that's a good point. That's a good point, which is why I would just add, you both may be right, but I have to plead guilty in that maybe I'm being, maybe I'm reading too much into it. I'm the one who pointed out Koheles, I'm the one who pointed out the Rav idea, if I'm going to die, what's the point of my life? That the Ramban didn't say. So maybe we're reading too much in the Ramban, I'm not sure. But yes, I think you're right. In light of what I added, so then that's a good point, Ellie. That's a good point. Okay. Let's see a Rashi, and then we'll end with the last verse. The Rashi I want to see now is Pasuk Beis, and this is the one that Ethan was machaven to before, he anticipated. Why is Hevel a shepherd? So, says Rashi, right in the meaning of Pasuk Beis, Lefish neskalkala ha'adama, because the earth had been cursed. Therefore, Parashlo, he separated himself from it, Me'avodasa, and from its work. That's a good question. Kain gets himself in trouble, as we know. Right? Okay. Now, let's end by seeing the last source, which is interesting only because, not that it contradicts the reality that Bernie referred to in terms of farmers and ranchers and that kind of thing, but just to point out, because we, especially since it's poignant, because we all know how tragic the story is going to end, so the Pirkei Derbi Eliezer, which is quoted by some, or similar, there's a Radak that says something similar to this, points out how beautiful, at least initially, it was all working. Right? Setting the stage for us, as we say, stay tuned for next week, you know, it'll obviously deepen the tragedy when it doesn't work out. Says the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yosef Omer, something even more interesting. Not only did they have twin sisters, in another Medrash, says the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, Kayin vehevel te'umim hayu. It's not just sibling rivalry, right? What's the only thing that could be worse than sibling rivalry? Twins! Shine'emar v'tzahar v'teilet es Kayin. I'm not sure. Who knows? What is the inference that he's making from that pasuk? I don't know. The S? I'm not sure. Why is the S Kayin? I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that's a proof text for that tradition.
Because he uses the word Tosef instead of Atar V'Teilet again.
No, but he's using it as the proof Atar V'Teilet is Kayin.
What? They were twins.
Why does the pasuk Vatahar Vatelet is Kayin imply twins? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, good. Thank you. Fahu Shaita Osifas Lemele. And at that point, added.
That goes back to what we said before. Why it doesn't say Vatahar is by the second.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Vatosef Leledes is Achiv. And then it was added an additional birth to the brother as Hevel. Now that I pointed, I mean, it's all one long sentence. That's why I put it in. But the real, what I was trying to get to, what the reason I'm quoting this to begin with, is what he says now. Vayehi kain ish ohev lizroa. He loved to plant. So first of all, that's the answer to your question. So why was he a farmer? He enjoyed it. He loved it. And again, how profound is this? Again, leave aside how kain ends up. But the point is, you know, it's another powerful thing to teach us. Right? It's not the long ago that I had to worry about this myself, and I've already been put in a position where people have come to me, but what should I do with my life? Career choices. So one of, if not the one, if not the first thing I say to them is, what do you like doing? Because the first thing you have to do is do something you like. I'm not sure if that's the first or the second. The first two is, what do you like and what are you good at? So you shouldn't be doing anything that you're not either love or good at. Because those cancel each other out if you don't have either of them. You can't do the other one. If you're not good at it, you'll eventually not like it. And if you don't love it, you'll eventually not be good at it. So that's I. What about all sorts of other external duties and whatever? So those may exist. But first, you have to know what you were put here for. And it's the ohave, I think, here is important in that regard. But then he continues. Even relating in a certain sense to Ethan's point, which is a different kind of an answer, maybe a more fundamental answer than what Alan said. Alan said from the Mizrahi, why was he watching the sheep? After all, he can't eat them. Oh, well, technically, you can get skin and leather. No, says the Pergolizer. He loved it. He loved animals. Very interesting. And now, what was the upshot? Why I quote? All that are extra bonus points, bonus gems from this Pergolizer. And the last thing he says is, Zeh nosin mimalachto machal zeh. Hence, not only do we have the first brothers and the first children, we have the first economy. They bartered. What did they barter? Say, there's where Alan's point comes back. You have some fur, you have some leather. Okay, good, I need that for something else. Here's some corn, here's some peaches, here's some whatever else he gave. They bartered. They were working beautifully together. Each one, it's mamish like what we would want from a family. Each child went in their beautiful way, and they complemented each other and worked together for the greater good. Beautiful. How beautiful a family do we have? Stay tuned. Okay. Yeah.